good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon, whenever you might be listening. My name is Jared. I am one of the hosts for this episode. Along with me...
Don't do my name in that voice, please.
...is the wonderful, delightful Miss Anna.
Oh, no. We will be your hosts for this podcast. We're excited that you have come to join us at our table.
Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide our overly considered thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Stranger Things, Upside Down, designed by Rob Davio, artwork created by Giovanna B.C. Bimarales. I go and apologize if I butchered that. And Henning Ludvigsen. And published by Come On Global Limited.
Stranger Things Upside Down is a 2-4 player cooperative game where players move their characters around the map, battling against stacks of tokens to complete objectives as they desperately try to save Will Byers before fear overcomes them and they are terrified. Will they be able to save Will? Will they?
Stranger Things.
Love it.
The phenomenon that has reached the United States entertainment core. It has put actors and actresses on the map. It has made people pee their pants. But most importantly, it has entertained millions of people.
Who do you know that's peed their pants?
So many people.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, but before we get into the nitty-gritty, Anna, over the course of 4 seasons, who is your favorite character and who is your least liked character on Stranger Things?
All right, well, you see, this is a very complicated question, Jared, because over the course of 4 seasons, the characters grow and change.
I would argue that's part of the character build, and yes, that's why it has to be all 4 seasons encompassed together.
No, I'm not going to answer that question.
Dang
I'm going
it.
To tell you, because it
You're
changed.
You're being very antagonistic.
Okay, so I would say there was probably one character that I had consistent feelings about through the entire 4 seasons.
Okay.
And that was 11.
Mm.
11 stayed at a nice kind of neutral ground for me where I wasn't really sure if I liked her or not for literally every single season. I knew I was supposed to like her, but she was very unrelatable, which I think is part of kind of the point of her character. But everybody else changed. So,
That's
you know,
true.
I started
or
off...
grew. I would argue grew. Or right. regressed. Some regressed.
Thank you for those choices and categories.
Just making sure we understand our options.
So for example, Joyce was probably my least favorite character on season 1 because she was so single-minded and focused and just put everybody in danger all the time and just kept hurling herself into, you know, the Upside Down and all the bad things. So she was probably my least favorite character, but I wouldn't say she was my favorite character by the 4th season, but I definitely had a really healthy respect for her focus and drive, I guess. Whereas in the 1st season, I found it annoying. Another person that changed. So in the 1st season, my favorite character was probably Mike.
Mm.
But we all know how sad and annoying he got by the 4th season. So that was that.
Mike was the one that truly embraced becoming a teenager.
And then obviously Steve, everybody's, you know, bad boy gone good, I guess.
The ultimate redemption arc is the what you're ultimate. Going for.
It was more like bad boy gone nerd, which is a really good redemption arc.
That's what I'm saying. So, it was incredible.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Anyway, does that answer your question?
Maybe. I'm going to say yes. So obviously Steve, for those that don't know, is my favorite character in this show.
But he wasn't in the first season, was he? Or by the end?
No, I'm saying encompassing his entire arc. I don't know. I have a real soft spot for the guy or girl who is like the quote unquote villain when it's in that smaller realm. And as things grow, they get their redemption arc and become the hero. Same thing with in Avatar The Last Airbender, where Zuko starts out as our villain, but ultimately has redemption by the end.
Or in Buffy, where Spike starts out
sort of thing.
As the villain.
Yep, absolutely.
And has this great redemption. It's true. It's good.
So yeah, Steve is definitely my favorite character in the show, bar none. Dustin's pretty close too. Least liked is 100% Joyce, and I feel like it only got worse for me. So here's the deal. In season one, my feelings were, you're annoying, but also you're looking for your son, so like I'm going to give this a pass. But then it just, as you put it, drive and continual need to get everyone in danger just continued to be more and more annoying for me as the show went along. But that was easily overshadowed very well by the awesomeness that was Steve. And I like the other kids too. Mike is not really a character that I've grown to love over the course of the four seasons, but the other kids have been pretty great.
You were kind of annoyed by Lucas for a little bit too.
Yeah, but since he kind of came back around, it was fine. Like, again, I think there are times where you can be annoyed with the character in the moment, but that actually plays a part in their overall, your overall joy of them once you look at it in the full picture.
There you go. I'm actually surprised that you didn't say that Hopper was your favorite character, because I'm remembering season one and season two, you were like cheering every time he would come on the screen. I'm pretty sure he just totally threw his life away by falling in love with Joyce, in your opinion.
Yeah.
And so you can't say that he's your favorite character.
That's true. And that's part of that four season arc. If we're just talking about season one and season two, which we could technically do because that's all that's covered in this game, then Hopper's pretty great. But yeah, over the course of all four seasons, Hopper kind of falls off for me a little bit as the season three and four.
So dad and boyfriend arc. You didn't jive as well with, is what you're saying?
That's correct. Yeah, I really appreciated the becoming the adopted father character. I love that. But obviously, I don't like Joyce, so that really clashed with some of my love for Hopper from season one and season two.
There you go.
Yep. Did you have a question about Stranger Things before we dive into this game?
Yeah, I'm just curious when you peed your pants.
I didn't pee my pants.
But you said people peed their pants.
They did.
Okay, when was the closest that you came to peeing your pants?
Oh my. In Stranger Things or in my life?
No. In Stranger Things.
I don't remember what season it was in. But there's something about a really long hallway with flickering lights that gets to me when I know that there's something extremely bad that's about to jump out of the corner, but I don't know when it's going to jump out of the corner. I think that happened in season one, but that's not the one I'm thinking about. This was in a later season, and there was something, and I can't remember the details. I just remember that hallway. Clearly, my memory is trying to block it out so that I don't have to relive it again and potentially pee my pants. But I think that's the closest that I came. Otherwise, I don't know that I had a whole lot of moments that really induced that potential problem.
Just everybody else that you know.
Just some people.
Cool. All right. That's really funny because that like hallway with the flickering lights.
Yeah.
That was totally mine too.
Nice.
I think either the one when they first discover the flickering lights and Joyce is like following them all over the house. And I'm just like, what are you doing?
No,
stop it.
I'm talking about in the lab. But
yes. No, that's what I'm saying. Like that one or the one in the lab where the dogs are like chasing them.
Yeah, that one was fun.
Pretty bad. Yeah.
Good time. All right, Anna. Well, let's dive into this game. So the way this game works, there's actually a plethora of games that kind of fill this general style. It's basically a map of the IP. In this case, it's a map of Hawkins in the top half of the board and a map of the Upside Down in the bottom half. And there are iconic locations that you will be able to easily identify as you're looking throughout the map. Each character, which a player controls a character, starts in a specific location. They're given a character sheet, which gives that character an ability. And then they're also given a red cube to track fear and 5 action cards. Some other games, if you've played that, come to mind. There's a Buffy version of this game called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Really on brand there. Eldritch Horror, Arkham Horror, kind of Pandemic, but I would say this is not really quite Pandemic-like. It's more of a move around the board, collect items to make your character feel cooler, and then ultimately try and stop this one thing from happening before time runs out.
I was going to say it was kind of like Pokemon Master Trainer. Because you go through and you're getting stronger and stronger. And then at the end, though, you got this huge stack of stuff you got to fight against, but you don't know exactly what it is. So you've got to just hope you're strong enough to beat it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That it has another IP concept where the mechanics themselves are pretty straightforward so that anybody can get into it. But it has the IP slapped on. So if you squint the right way, you can see that you're in the world. So yeah, I think Pokemon Master Trainer is a good example as well. Like I said, the board has a variety of Hawkins locations on it. So you have the buyer's house, you have the laboratory like we talked about, and school, and all kinds of stuff. And you also have patrol vans and a Demogorgon that are roaming around trying to cause trouble. There's a variety of stacks of cards. There's action cards, which are numbered 1 to 3, as well as sometimes have walkie-talkies on them and danger symbols on them. There's an item card deck, an ally deck, a scene deck, and a game timer that is represented by a miniature of 11, the character. You know, the one that, like, most people that watch this show really enjoy and would want to be able to play 11. Not a playable character, just a tracker for the game time.
She wasn't really a character in the first season, though.
She is in season 2, though.
That's true.
All right, during a round, you first decide to move. Every character, with the exception of Dustin, gets 1 movement. Dustin gets 2, based on his special ability. You can add action cards to your movement, then you move that many spaces. Again, each location counts as 1 space. If you run into, you know, there are things that stop your movement and all that sort of stuff, but that's the gist. Locations. Each location provides you with 1 or 2 actions. After you move, you get to perform one of those 2 actions. Sometimes it's just turning in a number of action cards to either look at a certain number of items and pick one, or recover from fear by calming down, or things of that nature. Or it might be a thing where you have to turn in a number of action cards to beat a stack of tokens. And if you've turned in a higher number of cards than the stack of tokens, then you complete that objective and something good happens for you. The tokens are randomly distributed and stacks based on the board state, and the tokens are distributed 1 to 5. So there might be a stack of 2, stack of 3, stack of 4, just depending on where you're at on the board. After you've done your location action, you'll go ahead and reset by drawing back up to 5 action cards, and then we flip over a scene. This is where the bad thing happens in a cooperative game. You'll start out in the first third of the game drawing 1 scene at a time, unless you have played action cards that have danger tokens on them. If you have danger tokens, you draw an additional scene per danger token played. There's ways to mitigate some of that based on certain objectives on the board, but generally that's the rule. The other icon that I mentioned, the walkie-talkie, if you play an action card in while you're sharing a space with another character, that counts for more towards your total. So again, you flip over these scenes. You do the bad thing, the board changes, and then you move on to the next thing. The game is won if you are able to save Will Byers. The way you do that, there are 3 stacks at the bottom. If you've depleted all 3 of those stacks of tokens, then you have successfully saved Will Byers. If no one has gone all the way to the end on their fear track, then you'll win the game. If at any point during the game, one character has their fear track completely filled up, then you lose the game. That is definitely something that will happen. But before we get into that, I want to just go ahead and clarify. I just described what happens in the season one game. There are differences to season two, but because we didn't get a chance to play those because we had to pivot last minute to this game instead of the game we were going to play for this episode, we haven't had a chance to play season two. So that's kind of how you play.
We did play season one three times, though.
We did play it several times. I actually stayed up and played an additional solo time just to see how it would play so we could, you know, get a good vibe for it.
So, Jared, what did you like about this game?
I will say for me right off the bat that this is not my favorite game. I think I went in with higher expectations with this game than I should have. And even still continue to talk myself into it after seeing the board and reading through the rules and that sort of thing. Because one, I do like the IP. I'd heard a lot of good things about this game and really wanted to like it. So I really went in with as positive an attitude as I could about it. And I'm going to talk about some things that I did enjoy, but if I don't have the same gusto that I usually do, we'll talk about that in a minute. So that being said, I want to start, and we're only 12 episodes in, but I've not started this way before. The rule book for this level of game is very well done. It is organized. It's easy to find something. It's easy to walk you through what each thing is. And then the actual how to play, I feel like, is 2 to 3 pages, maybe a page or two more, depending on how, like, what the nitty gritty you need to dive into. But as a gamer, it was very easy to kind of skim. I didn't have to really read it to get a good gist of what I was doing. And then I could go back and reference the specific little things as needed. So I do want to give a plus to that because writing rule books is hard and not many people do it well. And so I do want to go ahead and give props for that. Some of the other things that I liked. So I think that a co-op is supposed to feel tense. It just should. And I think that with the timer, it was really kind of two timers because you had, if 11 moves so far, then the game is over. But also, you are having to make decisions. You are affecting time. It's not just a round tracker. It's how fast you're burning through that action deck. And so there is your own timer in addition to the timer of the game, which really added to the intensity of trying to get it done as quickly as possible. So I really appreciated that. Any co-op should have that tense feeling at some point during the game.
Well, and I would even say there's another timer because you are gathering fear throughout the game. So, I mean, you gather fear when you lose a fight, but even the scene cards will sometimes make you gain fear and you can't help it. And if anybody ever gets to the end of their fear track, that you lose the game as well. And so I felt that was another kind of timer tracker. And there were times where the places you could go to recover from the fear were blocked by the bad guys.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have that option. So that was something to keep an eye on as well.
And once you kind of get into that state, the whole game is really a push your luck. It's a big just board of push your luck. And so you have to decide, can I get through 3 scene cards and not take the last 3 fear that I have here to be able to get to another round to figure out a different option to get my fear track back down so that I can keep going without fear of losing this game. But then again, even every stack, there's some ways to gain knowledge about the stack, but overall, there's still a push your luck element of, okay, there's only 2 tokens in this stack. I think I can get lucky and beat the average here. So I'm only going to commit these cards and try and mitigate how much time I'm taking away from the game. So if you really like push your luck, I mean, this game has that in spades all over the place. Another positive is that it is an extremely easy entry point. It does have some action decisions to make, and it allows you to kind of move into the board game genre without feeling overwhelmed. So I think that's a positive as well. Anna, what are some of the things that you enjoyed about this game?
Well, one thing that I'd like to add is I thought the artwork was really cool. I mean, it was realistic. Like, you could tell who everybody looked like, but I thought it was neat how the board game had the regular world on top and then the upside down kind of mirrored below it. And the one was kind of sunset looking and the other one was very dark looking. And each of the cards had that as well. The top world versus the upside down mirrored below it. So I thought that was really neat. It was pretty to look at and it gave a really good feel for the show and how, you know, you're moving around in the top world, but there's these monsters and these things happening down below that you don't even know until you go down there. So I thought that was a cool aspect of it.
Yeah, I think the art is cool. It's got a little bit of like this weird, it's this style of it's real, but also animated at the same time. And so the characters look slightly different than they do in the show, but it's got almost like that close to real comic book feel artwork to it.
Yes, close to real comic book. Or, you know, those apps that you do in social media where you turn yourself into a cartoon figure.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's very close to that.
Basically.
Yep.
I also liked, so you already mentioned the push your luck aspect. I liked the timer aspect of using the actions, because the actions are your economy, but they're also your timer, because you can only get through the stack 3 times before you're done. And that was something that wasn't just, I've played games that have my personal timer and my personal deck, but this was an interesting aspect because everybody was feeding into the same action deck. And so it's a timer for the whole table. And so if somebody else makes a decision where they're putting in a lot of action cards to get maybe an ally or an item, that's impacting me too. And that's fewer action cards that I could use to maybe then go and do another objective that I might think is more important. And so I thought that was an interesting part of it. And we only played with 2 people, but I think you would go through that stack even faster with 3 or 4 people playing it. And so that would be a very interesting acceleration if you played with more people than 2.
Yeah. So we'll talk about player count in a little bit. I do think it is both the same amount of time, but individually you have less turns. Because you are going through the deck at the same rate, but it's around 4 people instead of 2.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get back to player count here in a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. Spoilers.
Yeah.
Another thing that I liked was that the turns went quickly. So there were several different phases for the turns, but because, like Jared said, it was very streamlined, you use the same pool of tokens for everything, all of the different challenges. And so that makes it very quick to refill, or when you get an ally, you draw your next ally and you put the number of tokens there. And so it made things move very quickly. It made it feel like it was a strategy game without feeling like it was really weighty and took a very long time. I think you could easily get through this game in less than an hour and have fun with it.
I completely agree about the time element. And I think that would be the case at 2, 3, or 4 player count. Because again, you're on that timer. And so unless you just have people there at the table that are just analyzing and overanalyzing and paralyzed by their choices, which I just don't see happening in this game because there's only so many choices to go around.
Well, also you can't really metagame it too much because there's unknown in every single stack. So there's no way to ever know for certain what you're going into. You kind of just have to say, all right, I think I'm good enough and I'm going to go for it.
I agree. You can quickly pump through this game. We learned this game. Played it 3 times, and I think it took less than 2 hours of actual playtime.
Right. Well, the first time I died really quickly because I didn't.
But even
I pushed my luck in the wrong direction.
You did. you went up against the Demogorgon and basically had nothing on you. And then
the
you
first
paid your pants.
Turn. Yeah. No. Stop.
But even the other 2 games, I think we've got in 40 minutes or less.
And talking about the anticipation element of it, we were so close to winning that second game and I drew just the worst card that gave me 2 fear and I died, and we literally would have won on the next turn. And so yep. that was kind of interesting.
It's true. It was so sad.
The character balance feels good. The character abilities feel like they fit with their characters. And so that's fun. If you've watched the show, you can say, oh yeah, of course this character would have this extra mm-hmm. ability, or oh, of course this ally would give us this extra boost. So that was a fun part of it too. I think whenever you have games that are based on a IP, you've got to do a good job with representing the IP. And I felt like the game did a good job representing the IP.
I know I really enjoyed both Dustin and Lucas's abilities. They both felt like they were contributing and they did a thing, but they weren't too strong. And I also, I really liked how impactful the allies could be, which was a cool way of incorporating more characters into an individual game instead of having them be playable characters. People like Steve or the two police officer knuckleheads or a variety of other people, they all had really cool abilities that you could recruit them, and then you have that ability for the rest of the game. Like, you had the one officer that he was just shaving the tokens off of the laboratory every round, and that was super helpful. That was a really cool element for me, because I always like to feel like in a co-op that it's, especially when it's just you and I playing, and that's a lot of the co-ops that we play, I don't want it to feel like there's just these two people on the board against the world, which, I mean, that works sometimes. Like Power Rangers, that's fine. But for a game that's centered on IP of a group, you want to feel like that group is there, and this game really does a good job of that.
Yeah, definitely. And it gives you boosts for being together as well. So there's different cards that will give you one extra boost to the card if you're in the same location as another character. And there's scenes that you'll draw that give less of a negative impact if you're with other characters. So it definitely encourages you to go and explore things as a group, which also, again, fits with the IP.
Well, let's switch into our things that we didn't really care for about this game. So I think I want to clarify, and then I'm going to ask you what you didn't like before I dive into mine. When I talk about this part, I am talking specifically to my gamer friends that are used to playing heavier games. Because as I've thought about it, I will have two scores for this game. One for very gateway, like this is your entry into the hobby, or you've only played a couple of games and you're wanting to know what a co-op is like. That will have one score. And for those who have either played for a long time or have gotten into some heavier stuff, that will have a very different score. I just want to clarify that before we dive into my dislikes. But Anna, what did you not like about this game?
Well, first I would like to clarify that Jared told me I was not allowed to give two scores when I told him that I wanted to do it at the start of the game. And then he just said that he was going to give two scores.
I don't remember telling you that you couldn't have two scores. What are you talking about?
I told you that. I said I wanted to give a score for people that would just enjoy it because they like Stranger Things versus people that were wanting a heavy board game.
Yeah.
It was literally the exact same thing you just said. And you told me
I
couldn't do it.
You never said that out loud. I think that was in your head.
That wasn't in my head.
It was out loud. Who's talking to you in your head?
Whenever Jared can't remember things, he thinks I said them in my head.
That's not true. I know that you did not ask me this question because we have given multiple scores on half of our episodes.
Oh, man. All right. Maybe it was in my head. I think you just gaslit me.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Who's at fault here? Listeners, chime in on the Discord.
That's right. All right. Well, sorry. What question did you ask me?
Well, I encouraged that you don't need my permission to give a split rating at the end of the game, at the end of the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I also asked you what you didn't care for about this game.
Yes, thank you. So, one of the things that I did not care for about this game is that, so I know I said I liked some of the things that represented the IP, that the abilities represented the characters, and I liked the artwork. I did not like that there was a lot of repetition in the items and the boosts that they gave you. It's pretty much just the same few boosts that you would get, even though they were attributed to different items.
Yes.
In the scenes, it was pretty much two types of scenes. So that felt a little bit interesting that we kept coming up against the same kinds of things, even though we're in the middle of a story with a lot of complexity and a whole big world. And I think it could have had more diversity with that. So going along with that a little bit, and maybe this is unfair, but I'm kind of comparing this because there's several games that follow this format.
Mm-hmm.
There's even some other IP games that follow this format. I know you mentioned Buffy, which we've played because I'm a big Buffy fan. In several of the other games that follow the same format, there's a progression of story instead of just a progression of intensity.
Right.
And I think that if you're going to base a game on an IP and on a big story, you want that progression of story. So maybe 11 does start out just up at the top where you can use her, access her every now and then, but maybe later on in the story, she comes down and she helps you like she actually does in the season. But it kept the exact same format throughout. And so even though the intensity increased because you went from drawing one scene card at the end to drawing three scene cards at the end, which meant more bad things were happening, you didn't have any progression of the information or the story. And I think if you're, I think other games do a better job of helping it feel like new things are happening as you go through the quote unquote season than this one did.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, this game was super basic. I love the idea of a push your luck mechanic in a game, or if it's a game like Can't Stop that's going to take about 15 minutes. I don't like it as an overarching, everything is going to be push your luck for the entirety of a game that's going to take 40 to 45 minutes to play. I know that we said that the characters were balanced and they had abilities that kind of felt like were applied to them. I will contrast that by saying, I think you could take Stranger Things out of this board game, slap literally any theme on it, and it would do the same thing. I just don't have enough here to feel like I'm playing in Stranger Things. Dustin's ability was cool. Lucas's ability was cool. I never felt like I was Dustin or Lucas. I was just moving a piece of plastic around, trying to get enough math to beat the tokens on the board. I also will add that I definitely agree with what you were saying about the scenes feeling very repetitive and very much just, okay, we're doing this again. We're doing this again. Okay, cool. We're doing it again. Great. I agree it added to the intensity, but for what purpose other than to feel like there was intensity? I think for me, as someone who's, again, a little bit more into gaming than something at the most basic level, I'm a little disappointed by Come On Games. I've played a lot of their games, I support a lot of their games, and I think that they do a great job of balancing depth with accessibility for most people. But in this case, it really just kind of feels like a cash grab by slapping Stranger Things theme on it with a very basic concept and pushing it out the door.
I will say with that I was surprised when I found out the publisher was Come On Games, because I have learned to expect a lot more depth and complexity and a better finish, I guess, from Come On Games than we had in this one.
Well, and it's wild too, because, I'm going to mention the publisher and the designer here, and we'll go through some of their accolades because we've talked about them before, but it's not really to trash them so much as to drive the point home. This is designed by Rob Davio, who did Pandemic Legacy Season 1, Heroescape, Axis and Allies, Betrayal at House on the Hill. Like, these are fantastic games. I think he did this half asleep just to appease like this project. I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't actually like Stranger Things, but was hired for this. And he was like, all right, I got to do it.
Well, it makes me wonder like how much of this was just Netflix pushing it versus Come On and Rob Davio having any actual say. I don't know. I have nothing there but speculation. But yeah, this is something that it's again, I might be saying something that is an absolute plus for you. If you're someone who is either new to gaming or you only like basic stuff like Monopoly or card games or Catan, like the very basics, I have no issue with any of that. Like I'm cool with that. I think there's a place at the table for everybody. Those are not the games that speak to me the best. And this, I would definitely lump into that area of gaming because it just feels so basic. I'm being too critical. I can see it on your face.
I think you just peed on like half the people that are probably going to listen to this.
No, I'm not peeing on it. I'm like, again, if that's what you like, that's great. I'm happy for you because I'd rather,
But the tone of your voice says, if that's what you like,
no, that's
what's
not,
wrong with
no,
you?
No, it's not. It's not. I'm telling you, listener, right now, if you want to play Monopoly, I will happily sit down and play Monopoly with you because it means that we can share the table together. I won't care much about Monopoly, but I'll play. If you want to play the Stranger Things game, I'll do it. Like, it won't be my favorite game to play, but I would rather people be at the table enjoying what they like than not being at the table at all. That's my thought.
I like Monopoly. He shook his head at me. I grew up in a family where we probably played Monopoly once a week. And we got very invested in it.
Well,
much more invested than I was in this game the past few nights.
Well, it's interesting. So thinking about games that I'm more invested in, two episodes ago, we talked about Zoo Break with Faith. I think I get more invested in Zoo Break than I do in this game. I don't know. There's a whole lot. I think they're really similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Zoo Break just feels more thematic.
Yes. And that's it. You don't feel like you're actually doing anything in this game except moving pieces of plastic around.
Right, right. Because I was even thinking at the start, we were really scared of all the bad guys. Man, there's two patrols and there's just Demogorgon. There's goodness, like that's going to be so hard. And again, half of the scene cards have to do with moving them around and moving them closer to you.
Yep.
And so I remember the first game we played, one of the first things you did was activate one of Eleven's powers that removes one of the patrols from the board. And the whole game, I was like, man, that was just the best move ever.
It was not.
Yeah, because then in future games we played with all of them, and there's a rule in there that if you start on a space with a bad guy, you don't have to fight the bad guy. So all of those cards that are moving the bad guys to you aren't actually hurting you because then on your turn, you can just move out of that space.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting because they're supposed to be these really scary bad guys. And if the cards had moved them to me and then I'm surrounded by two patrol vans and the Demogorgon and I've got to fight them, that would be terrifying. But really, you only have to fight them when you move onto their space. Because when you move onto their space, you have to stop and you have to fight them. So they can block up spaces, block paths, make it kind of annoying to get around the board. But annoying to get around the board isn't the same thing as I'm terrified by these monsters, which is what I think you want in a Stranger Things game.
Yep, completely agree. There was annoyance, not fear, which is ironic because you lose by your character becoming a feared. So, Anna, this game can be played 2 to 4 players. We obviously have only played this game at 2 players, but I've played those other games that we mentioned at higher counts. While it gets more characters on the board, I don't like playing at the higher counts in these games because there's already such a limiting factor on what you can do. At least when you're bouncing back and forth between one other player, you can feel like you're kind of working together to do something. Whereas some of the strategies we incorporated in this game of, okay, I'll go ahead and forego my action to make sure and get to this location so that you can be stronger on your turn. Well, if you go right after me and you're trying to support me, but we have 2 other players, you got to wait. We got to do all this other stuff and who knows what's going to happen by then. So I don't know. It feels less, it's different. I personally enjoy this better at 2 players than I would at a higher count. How do you feel about it?
Well, obviously we only played with 2 players. I'm imagining because again, the action deck is the same size for 2 players all the way up to 4 players. And so you would just get a half the amount of turns, basically.
Yeah, you as a player.
You as a player, right.
The table would still get the same number of turns. It would just be split up 4 ways.
And I would say that even playing with 2 people, it still felt like, again, it went fast. And so that would be interesting playing with more people and getting even fewer turns. I could see that feeling frustrated. Like it would be hard to set up your turn, hard to support other people. You'd have to maybe be talking a lot more, planning ahead a little bit more. So I don't think it would be bad. I think it would be fun to get more characters and more character abilities. And you could utilize the group functions of being on the same space together and getting the benefits from that.
That's true.
Which we didn't do as often. We only did that when we had to fight really big bad guys or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas with more people, you could do that and utilize that better than we were able to do.
I guess that's true. I just, except for the really big stacks, I never fully felt like that was necessary. I felt like most of the times we could just kind of be like, okay, this is the average. How lucky am I feeling? And it would usually work out.
Well, we could, but if you think about that, you're essentially throwing points away anytime you use a card that has a walkie-talkie on it and you're not with somebody else. So it could be a better way of utilizing the action cards if you have more people and could strategically plan to go around in sets of two, and you get more points, and so you're technically burning through the deck slower that way.
I hear you, and I think that's a fair assessment. If this game had a little more depth to it, I think I would buy more into that. It's just kind of, yeah, I don't know. Okay, so any player count is really fine. You and I would, again, I will speak for me and say that I wouldn't play this with more than two people, just because if I were to play it again, I wouldn't is a strong term. My preference is to play it at two player because of being able to kind of just bounce back and forth.
I'd play it with more. Especially, again, like Jared was saying, this is something that's more of just a, let's sit down, play something light.
This is very beer and pretzels like.
We think Stranger Things is fun, and I think that you could do that with a group of people, and that's the expectation, and it could be fun.
Yep. I think you can easily have a conversation while this game is going on.
Which is fun for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
I'm not bashing that.
Okay.
I'm saying if that's what you're into and that's what you're looking for, individuals could play their turn and you could have a conversation going while you do that. There are no expansions out for this game. It is new to 2023. I don't know the exact date, but it came out this year. And let's talk about, I want to start looking at a different angle. Price point. So MSRP on this game is $50. Most online stores right now have it going for $40. I got it on a sale at $30. Now, one of the reasons I like to bring up this price point is that, especially with two people, you're really having to weigh the cost of what you're doing and whether that value is there or not, whereas it's kind of divided up more in a higher player count. But if it's a two-player game, you really want to make sure you're getting that value. So do you feel like this is a $30 game? Let me start there.
I think in some cases you've got to pay for the IP, honestly. Like, whenever we get Star Wars-themed games, they're always more expensive because Star Wars is a popular IP. So, I mean, that's my opinion on that. I know you buy a lot more games than I do. I mean, we buy more games, but you're the one that does the price research and stuff on that. I mean, I wouldn't pay $30 for you and me to just have this around for a date night, but I might pay $30 if I have a group of people that we watch Stranger Things and we have our Stranger Things watch party and we want to have this as a fun end of the year thing that we do together.
I agree. The IP is probably expensive. The game itself, $20 max. That is, I would feel like I got my money's worth at $20. I also envision at like a Black Friday sale or some other big sale, it will eventually get down to that. And so if you're curious but questioning, I would encourage you to wait and get it at that price point.
I mean, it's almost like you're getting two games for the price of one because you've got a back and you've got a whole nother story. And I'm hoping it's a whole nother story. We don't know actually if it is yet.
No, that's good though. That's two different perspectives on how, but you would never pay $50 for this game.
No,
I don't think
so. Or
justify anybody's paying $50 for this game.
No, I think it definitely could be worth $30 though.
Yeah, so you would need to wait until it's on some kind of sale, because even online stores are selling it for $40 right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'd feel good paying $30. And again, we only played one side of the board. There's a whole other side of the board with slight variance in rules. We didn't play that one, so we can't give a lot of information on that. But in essence, you're getting season one and season two. You're getting two slightly different games in the same box. So I think that makes it a little bit worth it as well.
I appreciate your optimism that season two will bring more.
It's a hope.
All right. Grading and final thoughts.
Well, I did want to give it two different grades because I could see us being here saying, ah, this isn't that great of a game. And somebody out there listening saying, what are you talking about? This is one of my favorite games. I love playing with all of my friends. And
more power to you. I mean that with all authenticity.
And I think the reason why some people might think that is because it's Stranger Things. And Stranger Things is fun. Stranger Things swept the nation. It's fun art. It's fun characters. I mean, even this last time we were playing, I was playing Joyce and I just kept, you know, barging into all these places and doing whatever I wanted and taking risks. And I was like, this is fun. It's like I'm actually being Joyce. And it was fun to play like that. So yeah, I could see some people really, really enjoying it the same way that I don't judge as harshly the IPs that are my favorite. I'll pretty much play any Buffy or Star Trek game that you put in front of me and find something enjoyable about it because I like those IPs. So
this is true.
Jared knows. He's had to convince me not to buy Star Trek games. He's like, this one is rated so low. Please don't buy this game. That happened just last night. Anyway, it did.
In fact, we weren't even talking about buying it. We were talking about renting it from the library.
That's true. We were talking about renting it from the library. And he was like, please don't make me play another half-baked Star Trek game.
Oh. Painful.
Anyway, and he does the same thing with Star Wars. He'll go out and buy every single Star Wars game out there. So I think you've got to give it a higher score just for people that think it's fun to play in that world, because it is fun to play in that world. Now, again, be warned, from our perspective, it doesn't feel as much like that world as it maybe could.
You might say it's half-baked.
But you could enjoy the aspects of the world that is there, just like any of us do with the IPs that we like. So if you're one of those people, and this is, again, an IP that you really like, and maybe you would really like this game, I think I'd give it a B. For everybody else, I might give it a C-. I think it's slightly below average in terms of the complexity. I saw on the side of the box it was rated for 12+, which is kind of interesting because I think that I've played similar games like this with my 7-year-old and she's done fine. But of course, you know, she can't look at the Demogorgon. That would give her nightmares. So it's probably only rated 12+ because it's Stranger Things. So they have to rate it 12+
right,
because it's Stranger Things. But in terms of the complexity of the game, a child could understand the complexity of this game.
I completely agree. And the very few things where you have to check back to the rule book again, that rule book is very straightforward and easy to navigate to get the answers to what you need.
What would you rate the game, Jared?
Well, you told me to be kind, so I will do my best. If you like Stranger Things and you like a very light game where it is used as a tool to create conversation and you want to hang out, but there's also a game going on in front of you, if that's what you like, more power to you. I will give you a B for this game. I completely agree with that rating. That's fine. I think that it's solid for that. Again, I could have a conversation completely unrelated to the game and still know what's going on and we'll have just as much investment and still enjoy being with the people around the table. If you like to feel like you're immersed in a story, or if you like to feel like your actions have real choice instead of just go from point A to point B, if you like depth, if you like feeling like you're actually playing a game that will not feel repetitive over and over again, both within itself and from game to game. If you want something more, I give this game a D-. And I feel like that's being kind. I really want to give this game an F, but I haven't played season 2. So it's almost like a placeholder, I guess. I really don't like this game. And again, it's my taste and my preference, and I feel like I've caveated that like 16 times because you keep rolling your eyes at me. Both you, Anna, and the proverbial listener that I'm picturing rolling your eyes at me.
They're just getting a taste of negative Jared.
No.
They haven't had that. He's only played games he's liked so far, or he's only reviewed games he's liked so far.
I gave one game a bad review, I think, maybe, kind of.
Not really.
Okay. Well, anyways, I I feel like there's better games that even in this space, I would rather recommend than this. So it's hard for me to give it a good pass. But that's just my thoughts. So I wonder, and this is also why I'm holding it at a D-. I was really excited about playing Sky Team, which is what we were supposed to review tonight. And because of a shipping debacle, we didn't get to that this month. So I was bummed about that too. So between that and Stranger Things just not being what I expected to be, I think I'm in double negative mode. So there's that. Anyways, thank you all. If you have made it to this point of my Negative Nancy podcast episode, no offense to Nancy's out there.
Or in Stranger Things.
Well, that's true too. we really appreciate you listening, and I appreciate your support. I think Anna does too, but I don't want to speak for her.
Sure, yeah, y'all can support.
Thanks.
Yeah. I want to say something, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know where it would fit, but I would have fit best like a minute or two ago. But let's see if I can find a way to transition from what you just said. Because it was when you were talking about all of the, just you were saying even within this genre, I think you could find something better. And the thing is, Stranger Things is new enough. There hasn't been a lot of stuff based around it. You know, I mean, I can, you know, I can rent Star Trek games from the library, yeah. You know, and there, and I think often the first game that comes out around an IP is not as good. And so I think this could maybe spur something better down the line, something that does feel more like the world down the line, especially if Stranger Things stays, you know, as wasn't just a fad that fades away, but stays something people want to show their kids one day because it was so fun. I think that you might find better quality stuff coming on down the line.
Yeah, I think that's possible. We've seen that a little bit with Star Trek. Obviously, Star Wars has had a gambit all over the place of good and bad games. So I know there's a couple other Stranger Things games out there that are like really light, slapped on theme kind of thing. But who knows? Maybe one day. I don't know how long Come On has the license, but maybe someday.
Thank you for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you could, we would greatly appreciate any 5-star reviews wherever you listen to your podcast, if they allow for reviews. Those are hard to come by these days. Please follow us on Instagram and subscribe to our podcast. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing the podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art and to Dimitri Terrace for the special music this week. Links to their music can be found in the episode description. Please check it out. Join us next week as Ian and Jared dive into the world of Marvel Champions. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Why are you doing this?